There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This is The Grill, live with you from Barasti. Great crowd down here at Barasti already, and we're only expecting that to grow. Why? Because if sport is your thing, well, you have got plenty to look forward to this afternoon. Premier League is back with a cracker from 12:30 over in the UK. It's 4:30 here. So within the next half an hour, Manchester United, who are on something of a charge at the moment in the Premier League, they're down at Fulham. How will they fare there? It's Ranieri against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We'll have all the team news for you in just a few moments' time. Then from 7 o'clock this evening, five games in the Premier League. Liverpool against Bournemouth is going to be our feature game. And then stay tuned to Dubai Eye 103.8. Straight after that, at 9:30, you've got Brighton against Burnley. Plus, Borough against Leeds in the Championship. That one gets underway at 5 p.m. local time here in the UAE. Getafe against Celta Vigo, just kicking off now, just after 4 o'clock. Real Madrid in action a little later on. Plus, action from across Scotland, Germany, Italy and France for all football fans out there. For cricket fans, well, you've got your work cut out later on as well. The New Zealand T20 and the Big Bash ongoing as we speak. A New Zealand 11. What does that mean? We're taking on Bangladesh a little later on. And it's the Windies against England in something of a dead rubber. The third and final test match of a series that has already gone for England, but will be fascinating nonetheless. Golf from Pebble Beach, golf from Victoria, Australia. There's Fed Cup tennis, plus a look ahead to the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship as well. Naomi Osaka, will she be part of proceedings down at the Dubai International Tennis Stadium? Injury strewn this week. We'll see and get more details on that one. And lest we forget, rugby fans as well. Six Nations action, second weekend. First weekend threw up so many talking points. What's this weekend we're going to be all about? Two games for you from 6:15 this evening. Just to let you know that the Manchester United game will be on the big screen down here at Barasti. As soon as that concludes, as soon as the final whistle goes on that one, they'll flick it over to the Six Nations. And a fascinating tie. First up, Scotland host Ireland. Two teams with a lot to prove in this championship. We'll have all the build-up ahead of that one. And then if you've got the taste for it, stick around for Wales against Italy a little later on. And there is also the Premiership Cup semi-finals as well. Northampton against Newcastle from 4:15 this afternoon. Lots therefore for you to get involved in. If sport is your thing, get yourself down to Barasti. It's a nigh-on perfect afternoon. Look up at the sky. It is absolutely beautiful. We are in good company as well. Lots of guests to look forward to and some world-class sport. At Dubai iSport, at Dubai I1038 FM, at Barasti Beach. Get involved.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai I 103.8.
I said we're in good company. We're going to have the former England, Middlesex, Essex, and, of course, a regular in many franchise cricket tournaments in years gone by. Oh, Shah's going to be popping in just a little while with his thoughts weighing into all things sports. But to guide us through the murky waters of international sport, alongside me at the moment, one of the linchpins of sports broadcast here in the region, Mr. Robbie Greenfield. RG, good to have you on board.
A very good afternoon to you, Tom.
And opposite you, another of those linchpins as well. They are the beating heart, the motor of sports broadcast here in the region, Mr. Mark Archer.
Afternoon, Tom and Robbie.
Good to have you on board as well.
He's actually not on duty today, but we've roped him in anyway.
I'd love to know what Mrs. Archer has been told. You know, that's all I can ask, you know, because...
Very busy working this afternoon down at Barasti. She doesn't know that 4:30 means Manchester United Fulham, and little does she know that 6:15 means Scotland Ireland.
One can only hope she's not listening, Mark Archer.
I'm pretty sure she probably is.
It's funny you say that, because when I arrived here, we're up at the rooftop garden, for those that are heading down to Barasti to watch their sport this afternoon, and Robbie and I said, ooh, looking forward to this, you know, a lot to get involved in, a lot to chat about as well, some great sport. He said, yeah, I know, I've had McCarty on the phone already. He can't believe why he didn't rotor himself on this weekend.
He can't, no, he's regretting that decision. Of course, his beloved Manchester United in action, kicking off in just over 20 minutes' time. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the manager, who I've just read has taken 22 out of a possible 24 points in the Premier League since taking charge. It is a quite sensational turnaround following the nadir of the Jose Mourinho tenure. He's rung the changes. No Marcus Rashford, which is bad for my fantasy team. And let's start with a little team news, if we can, Tom, from that game that is scheduled to take place at Craven Cottage. I'll give you the visitors first. first. Manchester United, David De Gea in goal, Diego Dalot, Chris Smalling, Phil Jones and Luke Shaw across the back four. Pogba, Matic and Herrera in the midfield. And up front, as I say, no Marcus Rashford. He's been the star man, the Premier League Player of the Month. It was the first time, I think, since the Alex Ferguson days that the manager and player of Manchester United picked up those two awards in the same month. Anthony Martial, Romelu Lukaku and Juan Mata are the triumvirate up front for Manchester United this afternoon as they try to beat Fulham and keep that amazing run going. Fulham, Sergio Rico, Dennis Odoi, Maxime Le Marchand, Tim Ream and Joe Bryan across the back, Callum Chambers and Michael Seri in midfield, Ryan Babel, Luciano Vietto and Andre Schürrle playing behind the striker Alexander Mitrovic.
Reason for that, do you think?
I can only think it's potentially just to give him a little rest before the PSG game in the Champions League. I'm not reading anything about an injury, so I assume he's fully fit. He may well play a part later on. He's been in sparkling form, as we know. He's been one of the real success stories of the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tenure thus far, as has Paul Pogba, who is playing. And those two have just linked up for so many goals and assists over the course of the last eight matches in the Premier League. As I say, 22 out of 24 points. It is quite startling. 7 wins, 1 draw, and looking for another victory away to Fulham. Not the easiest of fixtures for them. And let's just see how Solskjaer does when he has jigged the team about a bit. He was very settled before that and he has made quite a few changes here. Marcus Rashford may yet come off and play a part from the bench, but it's Lukaku, Mata and Martial up front for United.
Rashford and Sanchez on the bench for United at Fulham. Mark Archer, a self-confessed United fan, is enjoying us as well. Is that a bit of a gamble?
Look, I was just having a look at this on Sky News before I came, and the reason that the rationale is that they've got PSG on Tuesday and Chelsea next weekend in the FA Cup, and he's had quite a solid squad or starting 11 since Solskjaer's come along, and I think it's just a case of giving him a rest. I think if they can get a lead and get a result at Fulham without having to use the likes of Rashford, that's where he'll like to opt in. But if he has to bring him on in the second half, he's got that option as well, the extra pace of Rashford. Lukaku hasn't started a lot of matches under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, so he gets a rare start in this. And then I think he's got enough strength of depth to rotate three. It's a big, big week for Manchester United. If they can come away in a week's time and got a win against Fulham, they go to fourth. They'll jump ahead of Chelsea in the Premier League, albeit for a short period of time, which makes a bit of a statement. If they can get anything out of the result against PSG and, of course, a massive cup competition game against Chelsea next week, it's a big week in the season of Solskjaer maybe keeping his job or getting a permanent job at Manchester United, and a big week for the club. So I think you've got to use your depth of squad. As simple as that.
Let's get some thoughts from both of you on a few comments that came through from Ole Gunnar during the week. He says that Man United are 2 years away from being Premier League title contenders but do not need a squad overhaul to get there. That's what he was saying in the lead up to this early kickoff. We'll hear more from him in just a little while. Ordinarily, I would ask the question, I pose the question, Robbie Greenfield, is that being over-ambitious? Given the fact it's Manchester United and all that goes, is he being a little under-ambitious with that?
Well, it's interesting that he's talking in those long-term, well, I say long-term, 2 years, I guess it's not hugely long-term, but it's interesting that he's speaking in that kind of way, given the fact he is interim, given the fact that he is not confirmed yet as the permanent Manchester United manager. And I know Chris McCarthy being one, if you are listening, Chris, you would be the first to say we might be jumping the gun a little bit in rushing to suggest he's a perfect appointment. I know there's a lot of United fans that would rather see someone like Mauricio Pochettino come in the summer if available, and they view him as the long-term replacement for Jose Mourinho, and at the moment Ole Gunnar Solskjaer potentially just doing an exceptional job as a stopgap. I think obviously when the full season has run its course, there'll be a much clearer picture as to how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has done. But what he's saying is 2 years to get to a position for the club to be challenging for the title. When you consider that really they haven't really been title contenders since that final season of Alex Ferguson's reign, that's what, 2013, so we're looking at, what, 6 years now since they've really been in the doldrums under the three managers that they had in Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho. I know they did come second in Mourinho's first season, but they were never really title contenders in that particular year. And look, it's going to be interesting to see how Solskjaer can keep it going. And when you look at the squad, we've had people like Dwight York on our show to say, look, the squad is every bit as good as Manchester City's. The talent is right there. The likes of Martial, the likes of Rashford, if properly coached, if properly put into a system, can be the very equal of the Liverpool's and Manchester City's. We saw with Liverpool their acquisition of the two key players in the summer. You could argue Naby Keita as well, but in Virgil van Dijk and Alisson, they brought in those two key parts of the puzzle to take them from a swashbuckling team capable of scaring anyone and getting to the Champions League final to, as what we're seeing now, a title contender for the Premier League. So it will be difficult for City to maintain their supremacy at the top. And if United can buy wisely and continue their development and continue the growth of Paul Pogba as a force in the middle of that field, then yeah, they can certainly get there in 2 years. There's no doubt why they can't.
Arch, you know how we talk about player power, and like Robbie's sort of touching on there, you know, we've seen this extraordinary transformation with the squad at Manchester United from players who didn't want to play for one manager who are being given a bit more liberty now to express themselves out on the field, and we're seeing they're reaping the benefits. We're seeing the results as well. Given that, and given the wealth of talent that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer obviously has at his disposal, surely, if he doesn't need to add to that squad, okay, yeah, it's going to be a step too far, surely, for them to go on and win the title this year. But if they come out all guns blazing for next season, surely that would be the target.
Well, you start the season on 0 points, same as everyone, and it gives them a chance. I think they're still weak in a couple of areas, and I think that's been masked a bit by the team and the momentum and the good feeling around Old Trafford since Solskjaer's come in. But some big problems still there. One of the big differences is a lot of players were holding off signing new contracts, but since Solskjaer's been there, they've bought into what the manager's saying, and we've seen a raft of contracts signed now and players extending their stay. Albeit the likes of Phil Jones, a lot of people would argue that he shouldn't be there, but other players have committed longer term, and David De Gea, they've triggered the one-year option on his contract. If they get the dressing room to be in a good place, if the players are comfortable playing for the manager, if they're signing long-term deals, a lot of them would be holding off to see what happens managerial. That's kind of the way the players and the agents will want to play this, but he's getting players to commit now, so yeah. that's a good thing. They're still short. They still lack a dominant centre-half, I think. They've got some good bit-part players, but where Mourinho wanted to address the team in the last big transfer window, he wasn't allowed to make another big signing, and he wanted to add to those centre-halves. That didn't happen. So there's a feeling that there's a weakness there with a dominant centre-half. And let's wait and see. But I think there's still a couple of pieces of the jigsaw from really being a Manchester City or even matching Liverpool squad at the moment.
I think they're also, you look at Romelu Lukaku, just not, I think that it's become apparent that he's not the level that is required of a top, top club, a club with aspirations to win a title. He's not on the same level as Harry Kane or Sergio Aguero. And we've seen that. You know, Mo Salah, I know, not a typical number nine, but someone who's capable of scoring a huge amount of goals for Liverpool. Romelu Lukaku has just been exposed at this top level, I believe, and hasn't shown the kind of all-round game or indeed the goal-scoring ability for Manchester United to be the long-term future, I believe, at number nine. So, as Arch said, you know, that they're missing a very dominant centre-half, a Virgil van Dijk, for example, and I think they'd have to bring in a very good striker as well if they really wanted to contend for the title.
A good guy, a fox in the box, a South American warrior. Not all words that have been spoken about Robbie Greenfield, but a sad story, obviously, in the world of football this week about Emiliano Sala. I mean, I think we all knew about Emiliano's unfortunate fate after the final comments that he was making on his social media channels and bits and pieces whilst up in that private jet on his way over to Cardiff to start a new chapter in his career. Now being confirmed that he was the body recovered from that wreckage as well. Outpouring of grief, not just from the family, but from all those that were seemingly touched by this man. He had a massive impact.
He did, yeah. And the whole Argentinian footballing world has been very touched by it as well. Of course, some of the top players, Sergio Aguero, Lionel Messi, all paying their heartfelt tributes to someone who was clearly a popular guy. I mean, he was very well liked and very well respected in the footballing community. He had a fine career with Nantes. And as you say, at 28 years of age, he was excited to start a new chapter with Cardiff. And, you know, it's tragic when you read the message that he sent. And in fact, on a WhatsApp group, I believe, while in the air and, you know, excited about the next week of training. And he did mention that he was worried about the conditions and the state of the aircraft that he was flying in as well. So it's just a horrendously sad story. And you know, we obviously put our thoughts out to his family and to everyone affected by his loss.
Yeah, just reiterating those thoughts from Robbie as well, to all those at Nantes, all those at Cardiff, and of course the Salah family as well. Hopefully they can get some sort of closure in what has been a very emotional time for the family. And just one other one, Arch, as well, just to bring you in before we introduce our next very special guest into the conversation. It's been a bad week for South American football, the loss of Emiliano Sala, but also this fire down at Flamengo as well, engulfing the academy. I think the death toll now up to 10. And when you think that the impact that Flamengo Football Club has had, not just in Brazil, but on South American and world football from the talent that's come through that, these were just, you know, 10 youngsters and all those that have also been affected and injured in this fire, that it's a huge loss, not just to the club, but to football in the whole.
Yeah, it's a funny week when it puts sport and life into context and into perspective. And you think particularly with football, where there's so much money involved, and we see the likes of Emiliano Sala on what was deemed to be a cheap flight, a rented aircraft, where there's any which way to get to Cardiff, and that's the way that they opted to do. And again, look at the sad story in Flamengo, their training ground, where you think they'd have, with the money in football, state-of-the-art sort of, you know, water systems and alarms and these types of things in place. So this exact thing doesn't happen. But yeah, a tragedy really, and our thoughts go out for everyone in the football communities, whether it be in, as you say, France, Cardiff, or in Brazil. But massive shock and shame. And again, just I think it highlights how important life is, and sometimes sports not that relevant.
Make the most of it. Celebrate it. Get down here and be part of sporting remembrance throughout the world, as those that were lost in the Flamengo fire are recognised around the world over the weekend. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be introducing our next guest to the show. And of course, more build-up ahead of United against Fulham. It's live. It's down in London. It's underway in around about 10 minutes.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Barasti's own 10-year challenge launches the 10th of February.
So you're listening to The Grill. We're live from Barasti. We're up here on the rooftop garden. Beautiful evening. Beautiful late afternoon into evening, and loads of sport to look forward to as well. Let's just do a quick reminder of that team news for you ahead of our feature game at 4:30 this afternoon. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti. It is the buoyant and successful Manchester United against Fulham, who still are at the wrong end of the table, Robbie Greenfield.
They certainly are. They are languishing in the relegation zone. Let's go with Fulham at Craven Cottage and trying desperately to get a couple of points, a point or at least a rare win if they could, on the board. Sergio Rico is in goal. Dennis Adoy, Maxime Lemarchand, Tim Ream and Joe Bryan across the back four. Callum Chambers and Michael Seri holding midfield. Ryan Babel, Luciano Vietto, Andre Schürrle playing behind Alexandra Mitrovic for Fulham, the big number nine. Looking at Manchester United, going for yet more points under Ole Solskjaer. We mentioned it a few moments ago. 22 out of a possible 24 for Solskjaer in the Premier League since taking over from Jose Mourinho. David De Gea, as of course, always starting in goal. Luke Shaw, Phil Jones, who signed that new contract, of course, during the week. Chris Smalling and Diogo Dalo in defence. Paul Pogba, Nemanja Matic and Ander Herrera across the middle of the park. And no Marcus Rashford up front today for Manchester United. It is the big man, Romelu Lukaku, alongside Juan Mata and Anthony Martial. So it'll be interesting to see how this slightly new look Manchester United lineup can perform under Solskjaer.
Let's have that one coming your way. Just at, as I mentioned, 4:30 local time here in the UAE. So stay tuned for that one. Let's hear from the managers if we can. Let's get, before we get predictions from the boys around the table here, let's start with Solskjaer, who is on his way down to Craven Cottage. Well, hopefully he's at Craven Cottage at the moment, because they're kicking off in 7 minutes' time. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, obviously the interim manager for Manchester United. Interesting little comment, this one, from him. He admitted midweek that he actually has copied some of Claudio Ranieri's opponent today's training tactics.
He is someone that I've looked up to, admired. You read books, you look for sessions, you know. And so I know we're going to come up against a manager and a team that, first of all, the counter-attacking football that he's always been a standard in his teams. I copied a couple of his sessions, actually.
So high praise there for Ranieri. What about the side that he's putting out today, as we say? Couple of changes, he's rung a few. He reckons he's now putting his stamp on his side.
every day I feel it's that I do help the club, do put a little bit of my stamp on it. Yes, sometimes decisions of players' futures, they're not down to me either. It's the players. Do they want to stay? Do they want to move on? Do they want something else? But we have a vision and a picture and of how we want to look in a few years.
Now, just try and imagine the comments that would have come from his predecessor when you listen to this next clip as well, because Jose Mourinho, let's admit, you know, was all about Jose Mourinho. He was the special one, the self-anointed special one. And how often did we hear him criticising players and trying to avert some of the blame upon himself? Listen now to Solskjaer, the man that's taken over as interim boss, saying that the players, not him, the players are the ones that deserve all the credit.
It's been a great achievement, and the team deserves every single credit in that respect, because they've done it. It's the players, of course, but I don't look back at being proud of this or being proud of that. I've never been that way. I've always looked forward and never sat down before a chapter is finished, really, to be proud of something. Yeah, you reflect, but I've never said, well done. Maybe I should do more often, but that's just me.
Maybe he should do more often. It's just his character, isn't it?
You always imagine that the manager of Manchester United has to be a larger-than-life personality, I suppose.
Yeah.
In Sir Alex Ferguson, he very much embodied the club and became, in many ways, larger than the club itself. And when he left, that left a vacuum that they couldn't fill, despite the fact they brought in someone in David Moyes, who'd done a very accomplished job at Everton, and then they moved on to the sort of A-list managers, Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho, and it didn't work. They haven't looked at the structure of the club. They haven't modernised the way things work. Ferguson, I think, famously ran almost like his own house. It was quite sort of the nucleus around the club all revolved around him, and he made all the key decisions and he very much micromanaged everything. And now a modern day football club, you look at what the City Group have done with Manchester City, you look at what Liverpool have done as well, and the teams on the continent, they do things a very different way now, and there's a structure there that's quite different. So Solskjaer is a remarkably down to earth and very humble, as we heard there, a very kind of self-deprecating character. And you would think, is his personality big enough to manage Manchester United? Is this just a honeymoon at the moment that he's experiencing, a belated and elongated honeymoon? And that's the question. I guess time will give the answer to that. But at the moment, his attitude has liberated the players. And he's let them go and really, you know, display their talents on the pitch. And that sounds like a horrible cliche, but they were being held back by Jose Mourinho. They were being belittled by Jose Mourinho. They were at war in many ways. Pogba and Mourinho, Shaw and Mourinho, at loggerheads. And, you know, some of the key players in the team, Mourinho was actively trying to belittle. And Solskjaer has done the opposite. He has really put a lot of stock and a lot of faith in the players that were having such issues under Jose. And it's been just an incredible difference that has come about the club.
Can Claudio Ranieri save Fulham from relegation out of the Premier League into the Championship this year? He's got his work cut out, that's for sure. Let's hear from the home boss today. He says, and with good reason as well, he knows the challenges that are in front of him, and it doesn't really matter who they play.
We have to take a point wherever, against I don't know who. It's not important the name, it's not important the squad. It's important take a point and against these big teams. I know it will be very difficult, but I believe in my players and I'm very confident with them.
They might be in a precarious position, but Claudio also believes that he, the team, the squad, the fans, need to remain upbeat.
As a positive man, I say, okay, if it didn't happen so far, maybe it could happen at the next match. For this reason, always I'm positive. I'm positive in my life and I want to give my positivity to my players, because it's important. You are very, very in dangerous position. We know we are not stupid. No, we know what is happened. But we are realistic and say, okay, we have to fight. We have to fight. And then at the end, we'll see what happened.
I love Claudio. I just wish I could get a recording of all of his best moments. I'm sure there are out there in press conferences. A bit of a managerial loving as well, this one. Solskjaer talking about the fact that Ranieri is one of the coaches, the managers that he looks up to. For his part, Ranieri believes that Ole is the man for the job.
was a fantastic player. He scored a fantastic goal in the final. And now his career is open, and I wish to him all the best. At the moment, he deserves. He showed the players are with him. Manchester has changed the mentality. And then, why not?
So, time for the predictions before we go to kick-off. Manchester United are down in London to play Fulham. Mark Archer, Manchester United fan, prediction time, please.
I think they might have to huff and puff for a while, but I can see United having a convincing victory. I'll go 3-1.
Archer's gone 3-1. And Robbie Greenfield, prediction, please.
Well, I'm just reading a stat here. Fulham have lost all their matches against the top six sides by an aggregate score of 25-5 so far this season. So they haven't had a lot of joy against the established elite in the Premier League. I am going to say Manchester United, very originally, by a scoreline of 2-0.
1-1 draw for me. Just playing the killjoy, really. but if you would like to have your say, then do send your predictions through to us. You can text us now on 4001. Hope I'm not doing either of you a disservice here as we go to the a little break at half past. For my memory, I think I know you fairly well, but I don't think either of you have pulled on international clothes. I know, Mark Archer, you've played cricket at the highest level around the world as a bit of a bandit, but never international colours. Is that fair enough?
No, I'd have to be claiming some far out country and to try and even try and do that, but no, not myself.
Okay, if Carl was here, obviously he'd play the role of, you know, he's played international rugby for the UAE as well. Robbie Greenfield, you've played internationally, but as an international?
I have played internationally, I've played abroad, but my biggest claim to fame would probably be beating Martin Keimer in a nearest the pin contest.
Take that. Yeah.
I'll take that all day long.
Take that all day long. Well, next up, after this short break, we will introduce to you a true international, a man who's played at the very top level of the game of cricket. Next,
Arch and I will get my coat.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is The Grill, broadcasting live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. We have got a dream team here up on the top deck down here, and with good reason as well. Manchester United brings out the crowds. Good crowd down at Barasti, great crowd on the beach as well. Mark Archer, don't know what he's told the missus, but he's here as well. What's been happening in the opening couple of minutes of the game? Robbie Greenfield.
Well, what's been happening is that Fulham should be ahead. They've spurned two great chances. First, a header from the big number nine, Mitrovic, and Andre Schürrle following up from that rebound. David De Gea parried it into his path and Schürrle could not convert that rebound opportunity. Great chance for Fulham in the opening couple of minutes to get a precious lead, but they've squandered it and it remains 0-0.
Getafe have taken an early lead over in the Spanish La Liga. Sorry, Getafe have conceded an early lead. They're playing Celta Vigo at the moment. It's Getafe against Celta Vigo. 31 minutes on the clock and it is Celta Vigo who have taken that lead. I'll give you details of the goal score in just a little while. Quick reminder as well, 7:15 this evening. It will be on down here at Barasti. Won't be on the big screen, but will be on one of the screens down here, on several of them, I should say. It is the Madrid derby in Spanish La Liga at 7:15, Atletico against Real. Okie dokie, what else is happening in the world of sport? Well, plenty in the world of cricket, and we've got a true legend of the game with us here at the moment to talk through all things cricket. It's an absolute pleasure. A man who played six test matches, 71 ODIs, 17 T20 international, for England cricket team, also represented Middlesex, Essex, KKR, Delhi Daredevils, Rajasthan Royals, Hobart Hurricanes, to name just a few. Oe Shah joins us live. Ace, good to have you on board.
Thank you very much. Hello, guys. How are you?
Nice to have you. You look in the part today as well. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been involved with this cricket academy called the G-Force Academy based in Al Jadaf. So I've hot-footed all the way from there just in time to make it for The Grill.
If there was any doubt who the international star among us was, it has been totally cleared up by
Aviators,
the attire of
cricket
Mr. Oe Shah.
The lot. Ace, it's great to have you here with us as well. I have asked you in the past. I can't remember though, so forgive me. Your football team. What's your football team?
Arsenal,
man. See, should we just leave it at that?
North London
boys. See that?
I've got to get your thoughts then, in that case, on Unai Emery and the job he's doing, taking on from Arsene Wenger.
He's doing all right. We're doing okay. Look, since he has took over, things are, I think, in my view, looking up. I know a lot of guys think we should be doing even better, but things are okay. You know, can't be more. I mean, Arsene Wenger has had a great reign at Arsenal, but it was about time that the change sort of came around, and I think it's just one of those things. I think things will take time before, a bit like if, say, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gets a Man United job. I reckon things will take time for them to sort of consistently reach those heights. Mm. And I reckon it'll be very similar to Arsenal. So watch this space, I would say.
Watch this space. Yeah. Watch this space for the Emirates Stadium, that's for sure. We're going to obviously talk all things sport with Ace, but obviously you can't have an international cricketer in your midst without asking about cricket. Before we get on to a whole host of subjects in the world of cricket at the moment, what about the world of Oei Shah as well? You're no stranger to this part of the world, spending quite a lot of time over here in the UAE. What are you up to at the moment?
I've done a few things. I'm trying to do a bit more motivational talking. I think that seems to be a big subject nowadays, I think, in business and things like that. So funny enough, I did a motivational talk at JP Morgan headquarters here in Dubai about a month and a half ago. So I'm just trying to do a bit more of that kind of stuff. I'm doing some cricket coaching at the G4s Academy. And also trying to work stuff out with an asset management company called the Three Commas.
Hey.
So yeah, just trying to find my feet.
Fingers
in Dubai.
Pies,
I was going to say,
look at that.
Yes,
hey, see, it's good to have you here. It's great to have you here. As I mentioned, just that wealth of knowledge and experience you've got in the game. I'm just having a little look at the teams that you've played for. Obviously, that extraordinary tenure with Middlesex as well. You're sort of home from home down there at Lords with Middlesex, Kolkata Knight Riders, Wellington Firebirds, MCC, played a bit for them as well. Delhi Daredevils, stints at Essex. In Hampshire more recently in county cricket, Cape Cobras, Kochi Tuskers, Kerala, Hobart Hurricanes, Rajasthan Royals, Dhaka Gladiators. When would you, if you were to look at all those teams, all those colours that you've worn during your career, be it in the county circuit or more recently in franchise cricket, when were you at your happiest? When were you at your optimum in terms of personal benefit and just the happiest time of your career?
Happiest time of career, I reckon I probably speak for a lot of athletes, and that's when you're wearing your England colours. Obviously, I'm from England, so wear your international colours. I think it does. The thing is, when you start off as a kid, you play cricket, and all of a sudden the game becomes a bit more serious. You become professional, and then you actually realise why. And you actually ask yourself a question: why are you doing all this? And for me, it was very much I want to play for England. I want to play for my country. And I want to wear the three lions. And then when you get that, that's when it sort of hits you and realize, geez, I've made the journey and I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. But then at that point, then you got to also, then the new phase of your life starts, which is, how do I maintain it? I need to now, I've got here. Well, I want to make sure I'm stay here for as long as I can. Yeah. So that's when you start sort of tapping into every single thing that you've always dreamt about, playing cricket for England, but then how am I going to be the best there is for a long period of time?
So, question. I mean, if correct me if I'm wrong. So, you would have made that breakthrough, earned your first England cap while still at Middlesex, obviously.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
So, performances for Middlesex caught the selectors' eyes. That's how you said that was your sort of method in. Again, I don't know if it's the case for you, but is that something you see with cricketers, that when you make that leap up to national colours and international caps as well, do players remember where that all started as well? Do they end up focusing more on the England caps than the county sort of structure that put them there?
I don't think as a player you would ever think, oh, you're too big for your county, but all of a sudden, once you're in the England fold, your focus shifts to playing for your country. Yeah. And a lot of the times you might end up taking maybe a game off so that you're fresher and up for the fight when you put on the England colours. And that's sometimes perceived by a lot of people to say, he doesn't care about his county. He's doing nothing. He's sitting, he's just sitting in the dressing room having a laugh with his friends. He could have been playing out there.
Right, yeah.
But, you've got to look at the bigger picture from the athlete's point of view and for England's point of view. A fresher athlete who is regularly playing for England can't just be constantly playing county cricket, because the volume of cricket we play in England is so big that you get burnt out. And nowadays, international cricket, and especially England, who played sort of 12 months round of the year, it's impossible to stay fresh. So you've got to have your breaks so you can, you can play at your optimum level when you put that England cap on.
A lot of players have been quite candid about how much pressure they felt while playing for their country. A lot of English cricketers have spoken out on this. What was it like for you, Owe, in terms of when you made it as an England cricketer? Did your whole mentality and your mindset shift a little bit, and did you feel under more pressure to play your best cricket?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I absolutely love playing for England. I had a belief that I belonged there, and when I got picked, I felt, you know, this is the arena that I was meant to play my my cricket in. And look, there is pressure in everything really in life, and it's all about how you sort of react under it, and that's how I saw it. So, and I just thought, you know what, I am not going to walk out of a cricket ground thinking, what if? And I want to try and do everything I can to perform at my best. And what I mean by that is not worry about too much about the result. It's all about going out there and performing. And if I performed at the right, in the right mindset, and react under pressure in the correct way, everything will look after itself. And that was a mindset I had, probably at the time when I was sort of 27, 28. Because that was the longest sort of run I had in the England team, and I absolutely loved it. It's a great dream come true.
Talking of England cricket, and we're going to get your thoughts on the current series at the moment. Blink your eyes, you missed this series, isn't it, Arch? I mean, talked about back-to-back games, and we're into the third test, starts later on this evening, 6 p.m. Local time here in the UAE. I actually want to get both of your thoughts on this one. Let's start with you, Mark Archer. Some suggestions that England were ill-prepared for this tour. It goes back to what Ace was saying there about scheduling as well. You look at the international schedule, especially in a World Cup year as well, trying to cram series in at the moment. England with one of those sort of Mickey Mouse warm-up games down in the Caribbean. Is that enough?
Well, it's enough for cricket, but let's just talk football, because I think there's a goal at Craven Cottage.
Pretty sure the goal has come from the man who has been in such a rich vein of form under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It is that man. It is Paul Pogba. We're watching a replay on the big screen now. United, who have been monopolising possession in these last few minutes. Just a suggestion perhaps of offside, but what a left-footed finish from Paul Pogba. Played through, a lovely little through ball. He runs, he peels off the defender, and he is fired in at the near post. Keeper perhaps could have done a little bit better with that one, but it is an emphatic finish nonetheless from the Frenchman, and his form just keeps on carrying on, Tom Urquhart.
Doesn't it just? Yeah, so Paul Pogba has rifled Manchester United into the lead on 14 minutes. Mark Archer, are England ill-prepared for this tour, were they?
Yeah, it's been a terrible result, just, you know, 2-0 down and comprehensively outplayed by the West Indies in pretty much every facet, out-bowled, out-battered and out-fielded, and it's stark contrast to when they went to Sri Lanka just before Christmas, where they looked to adapt and they got the conditions right, they got the selections right, and there were some great performances. Take a month off for Christmas and New Year, and the England team almost looked like a different side. And you would have thought, out of the two places they're going to travel to, they're better equipped to go to the West Indies and probably play under surfaces against teams that they're going to be better against, as opposed to going to Sri Lanka. And it's been a massive change. And the same old problems we talk about with England seem to be reappearing. Top order batting, just being players showing lack of discipline and application and wanting to occupy the crease for long periods of time. Collapses have come in there, and the batsman just not giving the bowlers a chance to get back into the matches. You talk about preparation there, and Owe's probably in a bit better position to comment on this about, you know, the tours of yesteryear, there were multiple lead-up games. Everyone got multiple innings to get ready under different conditions. Everyone got a chance of a run-out. But when they go on tour these days, it's like, this is your team. We've got no options batting-wise because we've got one other player who can come into the squad as a batsman, and we've got a couple of bowlers that we can rotate if required. And it's strange, though, but always it's a massive turnaround, and England have been really disappointing.
Yeah, they have. I would probably just say that. I think there's been a difference. You know, you said about there's been almost a very different team that's played before Christmas and after Christmas. And I just wonder whether the way they prepared sort of reflects a little bit about, well, if England play well themselves, they should be too good for the West Indies. I just wonder whether that was the attitude of the England cricket team. And I don't think that was a a smart attitude to go into that series, because yes, you got to play well and you should beat them, but I don't think they were prepared to say, well, if West Indies play better than us, what do we do? And that's exactly what they've done. I mean, you talk about, you know, you blink it and the X series is gone. Yeah. Well, you blink, the batting lineup's gone. I mean, we are losing wickets such a fast interval. It's unbelievable. I mean, I know England team are I've often had in their sort of system almost that the odd collapse, but this is on a different level. I mean, when we can't even bat a day, it's bizarre. And like you mentioned, I think the scheduling sort of doesn't help, because nowadays I get the feeling that when the team goes on tour, they generally know 9 guys who are going to be playing. Yeah. I reckon that's what the captain and the coach roughly have an idea. Now they need to pick 1 or 2 guys to sort of fill in the gaps. And what they tend to look like nowadays is the when they have, like I say, a 2-day game, they will just sort of try and see, okay, that's the candidate for that position. Let's just see how he's going. Yeah. And if he's hitting them well, right, he's in. Or he's bowling well, right, he's in. I don't know whether there's enough emphasis on the whole team to say, how is the team sort of functioning under pressure as a unit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the only thing I would sort of pull up on. And again, I refer to you guys for better counsel on this one, because I remember, you know, loving my cricket and growing up, and when an England team went on tour, they play a couple of warm-up games against a couple of the French, you know, obviously there'd be a President's 11, but then you'd play against one of the equivalent of county sides over there or whatever as part of that build-up. Whereas more recently, we're seeing these sort of, you know, endless 2-day games where you've got 14, 15, 16 players all getting a bit of a bat. Some people are tired, then you get it sort of back in, and there's understanding. And I don't know if that is the best preparation for conditions. And it seems to be that it's caught up with England in the West Indies.
Yeah, but that's the thing I'm saying, because you know, roughly when I'm talking about when the 9 guys sort of roughly make your team, there's no pressure on everyone to say, well, you know what, we all need to fire. So we also almost know that we're going to be playing. So what happens with that is when you have a practice game, you're not that fussed whether there's much riding on the game or not, because all you want to do is spend a bit of time in the middle, get used to the foreign conditions and say, right, oh, I'm ready for the first test. Whereas I don't know if that's a healthy attitude. I still think that guys need to be going into a game which should be first-class cricket. Yeah. So that, you know, there's something riding on it. And then also what that happens when you talk about having a 2-day game, that also then reflects on the opposition that has been put out by the board, because they're saying, oh, well, so you've requested a 2-day game, basically middle practice in inverted commas. So we will give you that kind of sort of, basically, we'll give you 11 fielders. You have your outdoor glorified net. And then, you know, we'll just call it a day after 2 days.
Oh, well, here's the interesting fact is after this third and final test match against the West Indies, England play 1 4-day test match against Ireland before the Ashes starts on the 1st of August. That's the next test match they're going to come into, and I'll call it a proper test match against a tier one or a four-member team. That's a scary thought if you're Englishman, because the juggling selections, they don't seem to know what their best batting lineup is. Folks was in, now he's out. Bairstow's batting 3, but now he's wicket-keeping. Jennings was out, and he was in again. Then he scored 100, then he's back in again. There really is and there's no time now to experiment, and there's probably not a lot of first-class cricket, albeit with a World Cup coming, to really figure out who is the team going to take on Australia. Now, Australia have their own well-documented batting problems, but they have some big names coming back into contention for selection, you know, whether it be Warner or Steve Smith. They're going to be in the mix. But England, as well as we've talked them up about playing well, they've got some problems, haven't they, to figure this puzzle out.
We have got some huge problems. And the reason, exactly, I was just going to say, you know, you got to remember in the Ashes, Australia have got two big guns coming back. I mean, these guys are, you know, regularly performing for Australia. Now, the difference we have is we've only got probably one guy on paper. I know his sort of forms have dipped a little bit off late, but Joe Root, I'm talking about, basically. He's the one guy who is sort of, you know, top-class bracket. Apart from that, in the batting lineup, I don't think we've got a guy who you can say he's a jet, and that's the issue. And you know, and amongst other issues, we don't know who's going to open. We've got guys playing Test cricket now in an England shirt, averaging 30 in first-class cricket. It's just not going to be good enough, and I really worry for us come the summer in England in the Ashes?
Looking at England's failure, Owe, to score any runs in this West Indies series, I mean, you look at the fact that in this particular third test, Joe Root likely to start at number four. It strikes me that the three best batsmen that England have are Joe Root, Joss Butler and Ben Stokes at 4, 5 and 6. 1, 2 and 3, therefore, Rory Burns, Keaton Jennings and Joe Denley, if they don't get in and make a score, then the momentum is with an aggressive bowling lineup like the West Indies. Joe Root comes in and the team are struggling 3 wickets down. It's just extremely difficult. It puts a lot of pressure on him as captain. And Nick Compton made some comments recently about how Joe Root should perhaps consider giving the captaincy to someone else. Who he'd give it to, I'm not entirely sure. But the point being, the most important thing from his point of view, as you just mentioned, he's the best batsman England have, is to make runs. And whether the captaincy was stopping him from doing that to a degree, is that something that is a viable issue, or is it really just a case of Joe Root being the only candidate?
I think, Robbie, you were mid-sentence there, and I can tell you from Craven Cottage, it's now Manchester United have doubled their lead 2-0 over Fulham, and it's a tremendous goal from Anthony Martial. He's beaten, if not one, two or three players in a mazy run pretty much from the halfway line. So we're just looking at the replay now. Ball's gone wide and he's picked up the ball well inside his own half, and he's shogged off one challenge. He's gone around the second man and he's calmly put a clinical finish past the Fulham goalkeeper. It's a world-class finish from the Frenchman, and it means after 23 minutes, it's Manchester United 2, Fulham 0.
And I think that's why so many people get frustrated with Anthony Martial, managers and fans alike, because that is what he's capable of doing, and he perhaps hasn't done that as often as people expect him to. But wow, what a goal, an incredible solo goal, brilliant run and a beautifully calm finish, and this could be a cricket score. We've been talking cricket. Manchester United 2-0 up already on the 23rd minute of this game at Craven Cottage.
You mentioned Nick Compton there. I just want to play a few thoughts from Nick Compton before we get back to Ace's thoughts.
Been rambling for 5 minutes and didn't actually give him a chance to respond.
Don't you worry, we'll get back straight to that one. But you mentioned Nick Compton, friend of the show, friend of Mark Archer's as well. He's doing a lot of media work over on this series at present. Nick's come out with some interesting comments about the state of play for English cricket at the moment.
He shouldn't be at three. At number four is his right position. But I think I'm worried about him in the sense that he was fast becoming England's best player after Alistair Cook. Look, that's an unplayable delivery. He got a couple of very good balls. I think the second...
There's
not much you could have done about that, let's be honest. But in terms of Joe, he's fast becoming this kind of dasher. And I think he's limiting himself. You know, Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, Kane Williamson are players that have almost moved ahead of him now. And I'm worried about that because his leadership... taking strain on him, and do we need him to be the leader? I think we need Joe Root being our form player, our best player, and that's what we need him to go back to. We need him to go back to scoring lots of runs, and I think at the moment he's a little bit loose. I think he's not spending enough time at the crease. It is difficult. The conditions have been tough. It's not a criticism of him as such, because we know how good he is, but that's what I think Joe Root needs to go back to doing.
There we go, Joe Root. And the question, I suppose I paraphrase there, Owe, about his role going forward, the Ashes, of course, being the integral series later on this summer. He will be captain for that Ashes series. But do you agree with Nick Compton's sentiments there?
I can understand where Nick's coming from. But the only thing I would say on that is I actually think the problem for us in English cricket right now is the top three. We've just lost Alistair Cook. Obviously, he's finished. I mean, leading up to his retirement, I don't think he was in much form. And the point I'm trying to make here is basically the top three are exposing our best batter far too early in the innings to the new ball. As a batter, when you walk out, or even as a captain, I mean, I had a limited amount of captaincy experience, and I've done a fair bit of stuff, captaincy stuff when I was under 19. When you walk out to bat, you don't necessarily... think like a captain. You just put your helmet on, you put your gloves on, you walk out there trying to play as a batter. When you're in the field, obviously that's when your captaincy stuff kicks in. But also, if you do get out, when you come off the pitch, that's when your sort of captaincy head sort of kicks on again. You start thinking, maybe he could bat there, he could do this, da 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 da. My thing would be saying is, I think Root, okay, he's fine at number four, but because our top three haven't been good enough, they're just letting our best player get into the innings far too early. Now, the new ball, with the kind of bowlers around and the pitches that we're playing on nowadays, is going to be very tough for someone like Joe, who, when he's not in form, especially,
to last against that new ball. Now, if our top three were doing a good job, he walks in maybe in the 45th, 50th over, or the 60th over. The ball is soft. The bowlers are tired. He gets in, and all of a sudden, he makes hay. I mean, it's amazing how that sort of losing wickets early can expose our batter. And at times at Middlesex, we found that. We had Mark Raprakash, who was a fine player at Middlesex, and myself to a certain extent. I batted three most of my career at Middlesex. And we found that during the summers when we didn't have decent openers, the number three was practically opening the batting. And I know Joe's batting at four, but you see where I'm going with it. And you don't want to be regularly going out there against a new ball. You sort of think, come on, guys, if you can just blunt the new ball for at least 30 overs, 40 overs, when I walk in, at least the ball is not that hard. And I can make, I can sort of get in because you got to base your batting lineup against your best player, which at the moment is Joe Root in England.
On that, we're going to hear from Ramps in a little while, and obviously Ramps is over there as part of the England setup at the moment as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, fellas, but and again, I might well be here, but interesting observing for me during this series, and a lot of former players are obviously doing a lot of media work around this. When we heard from Nick Compton, he's doing a lot on the cricket social at the moment. But I was watching the second game, and obviously they're doing a lot at the ground, but a lot more back in studios in the UK. And one man who was giving analysis during the lunch break and the tea break was Graham Thorpe. Now, isn't Thorpey still involved as part of the batting coaching lineup? So why is he in the UK giving thoughts on batsmen who are over in the West Indies? Surely if he's part of the management team, he should be there, shouldn't he?
No, I think Graham Thorpe is the lead batting coach for ECB. Okay. So his role would be right at the top. He's the main batting coach. Under him would be someone like Mark Raprakash on the other guys. And then Mark is obviously assigned to, say, the test team right now in the West Indies. Yeah. But not to say that Thorpe doesn't get involved with the England team. I think he's going over for the one-day series. And I think that's how they sort of tend to work together. Graham Thorpe generally looks after the one-day stuff. Not to say he won't get involved in the test stuff, but I think Ramps is the lead batting coach in for the test guys. And I think that's how sort of divided the role. And I guess, the media guys want to sort of get an insight from someone from the inside the camp. Graham, I guess, is quite happy to sort of talk about it.
Makes it very hard for him to come in and really criticise players, though, on air, because they're guys that he has to work with, he has to motivate. You can't sort of have it both ways, where you come on as a pundit and then you're employee of the team. But the interesting thing about England is they have so much power and strength in their middle order. When you look at the like of Ben Stokes, who I think is, we talk about Joe Root being world-class, I think Ben Stokes is their best cricketer. I think he's got so much talent, and we've seen innings from him in the past where he's just blowing teams away. He's got the ability to take a game away with the ball, picks up wickets, but with the bat he can move a game on and just shift it. You got Stokes, you got Bairstow, who's been in great form, and you got the likes of Josh Butler, who's done well with the game, moving back into Red Bull. But those guys, however slow and they talk about the pace of the game sped up so much more these days. Doesn't matter what England do at the top of the order, as long as they preserve wickets and give their middle order a chance against a softened ball, those guys can pick the run up, the run rate up, they can move a game on. There's so much power and explosivity. All three guys could play all three formats. But in Test cricket, that's on now.
Hate to break up this pipe. We'll get back to this subject in just a few moments' time. We've got to go to the news at 5 o'clock. You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barassi. We're up here on the rooftop. We are in good company as well. Robbie G is with us. Mark Archer and the one and only Ace Man is with us as well. Oe Shah is live here on The Grill. If you'd like to have your say, then get in touch with us. Come on down and be part of proceedings live from Barassi.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.